Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
And good evening. John Jeffers here at the Contra Radio Network. Welcome you to Sunday night. Sunday night, yes. Well, tonight I want to talk to you about the seven dangerous events that could lead to martial law. I know. You're thinking about, what are you talking about, man? Well, what I'm talking about, you know, not too long ago we talked about whether or not this country is... is on the verge of another civil war. And we got some interesting responses back. So I thought, you know, we've already fulfilled two of the three requirements, if you will, or prerequisites, if you want. So now let's talk about the seven dangerous events that could lead to martial law. If you want to opine, and I hope you do, give us a call. 516-453-9389. It's 516-453-9389. Or, if you like, you can go ahead and go to the chat room. It's open. No one's there yet. That's okay. It will fill up. There will be people there, I guarantee you. So if you go there, don't despair if you're the only one there. It will populate. I guarantee it. That's one thing I can guarantee. I got smart listeners. You know, like I said, it's Sunday night. People are getting ready for work. I get it. I had to get a big gulp of the alkaline water, 8.8 pH. Okay, so let's do a little chat here. And then I want to get to a message I got through Facebook from one of our listeners. And I meant to get back to him, and I failed. It came out a couple of weeks ago. Rob A., you know who you are, pal. And I will read to you what he sent me after we're done with this. And it's something that said, he brought up a good question. And it's a question that we all face, especially if we have to commute long distances to and from work. But let's get on it. I found this from urbansurvivalsite.com. I thought you might find it interesting. For most of humanity's existence, entire countries were run by little more than glorified warlords. Although today we take the concept of individual rights for granted, the vast majority of people had never heard such a thing until a few hundred years ago. As democracy began to shape the face of the Western world, power began shifting from the hands of the few to the hands of the many. A radical idea, to be sure. So today, the United States, along with most modern nations, has a precarious balance of power between the people and those whom they elect. Just how precarious that balance is remains to be seen. Martial law has been enacted many times and in many places, and every time it's been enacted, it has changed the nature of people's rights. As the world becomes increasingly unstable, the chance of martial law happening in your town becomes more and more likely. If one of the following scenarios unfolds where you live, martial law could be just around the corner. So let's look at the difference first between martial law and a state of emergency. First of all, there is a difference between true martial law and a state of emergency. True martial law is when the highest ranking member of the military takes over leadership of the government, controlling all aspects of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. An excellent example of this can be seen in the cases of Germany and Japan after World War II, when the U.S. military dictated all actions of Reconstruction, also known as occupation. A state of emergency, on the other hand, is when a state or federal government suspends certain constitutional freedoms to react to a disastrous situation. In the eyes of a prepper, both impose the government's will on the people and suspend constitutional rights. Knowing who suspended your rights, for example, a military or political leader, is less important than dealing with the loss of your rights in the first place. So here are seven dangerous events that could cause this to happen. And number one on the list, economic disaster. The first dangerous event that could lead to a martial law is an economic disaster, such as a worldwide stock market crash. As of March 2017, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is seeing record highs. But whenever it hits record highs, you can be certain a crash isn't far behind. In such an event, the public would scramble to withdraw cash, causing banks to collapse. On the other hand, if the Federal Reserve keeps interest rates too low for too long, the economy could crash due to hyperinflation. The stock market would continue to soar, but it wouldn't matter because people's money would lose its value. In this type of event, people would have to resort to barter in order to buy and sell things. Now, many economic situations today teeter on a delicate balance. Debt to foreign countries, increased defaults on student loans, and other unseen economic bubbles could cause a crash in the near future. Just look at what's happening in Venezuela. Now, CRN, Terry Kaz's urging, we started following the Venezuela thing when it first started. And whenever we can find some news of interest showing the further deterioration of what a country looks like when it's circling the drain, we posted it up on CRN. Now, if things get out of hand, the government could enact martial law in order to maintain order. Number two is a cyber attack. A cyber attack is a very real threat that could render useless anything dependent on the internet. In October of 2016, East Coast internet users found themselves unable to access sites such as Amazon, Twitter, PayPal, and Netflix for an entire morning because of a cyber attack. If a similar attack knocked out a large portion of the internet for a day or longer, it would cause panic in the markets and for many businesses. A full-blown government cyber attack with enough sophistication could knock out the entire country's internet. Any online data from banking to transportation would be knocked out and chaos would ensue. Enter martial law to save the day for a while. Number three, one we've talked about before, an EMP attack. An EMP attack would have even more severe consequences than a cyber attack, although probably more localized. Well, not necessarily. An EMP, for those that don't know, for you new preppers out there, is also known as an electromagnetic pulse. It is a burst of electromagnetic energy that can knock out all forms of electricity in its vicinity. A city hit by an EMP could be sent back to the dark ages in a split second, ushering in all the rioting, scrambles for resources, and intensified violence associated with an extreme disaster. The government would most assuredly call for martial law until some semblance of normalcy returned. Number four, a conventional attack. Martial law could also be called into effect in the wake of a conventional attack from an enemy force. A great example of this is when Abraham Lincoln suspended certain constitutional rights during the war between the states. He closed courts, shut down newspapers that disagreed with him, and even imprisoned people without a trial. If the U.S. were to become involved in a total war once more, which is certainly possible given her adversaries abroad today, you can be sure martial law would follow suit. Number five, disease outbreak, also referred to as a what? Pandemic. One of the most likely episodes that could lead to martial law is an infectious disease outbreak. Now, while zombie apocalypse fiction and end-of-the-world scenarios are popular fantasies in the minds of preppers, a very real disease threat, whether by accident or biological warfare, exists, looming over the population. In fact, there are many diseases that could be a problem after the shit hits the fan. Entire civilizations have crumbled to the ground due to disease, and even though today's population is living through the most technologically advanced time in history, a radical disease only needs a slight foothold to do some major damage. Should a deadly disease outbreak occur, you can rest assured the government will be there to try to knock it down. Number six, riotous populations. Now that sounds very close to some of the things that we see today. Now, martial law can also be called into effect when the population gets out of hand. A mild example of this can be seen in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, when, during a state of emergency, government agencies and private contractors working for the government confiscated weapons in New Orleans. In any crisis, the governor of a state usually calls in the National Guard as a backup, either for peacekeeping or for environmental rescue. In the event of a riotous population, especially on a massive scale, martial law could be enacted to beef up the police force and to keep law and order. Now, with political tensions as they are, this may be closer to a reality than you think. Seventh one, and one we probably have all thought about, just haven't mentioned yet, so we'll get to this one. Natural disaster. As mentioned above in the example of Hurricane Katrina, natural disasters such as hurricanes often lead to the enacting of martial law. While Katrina may be seen as one of the worst possible natural disasters, there is certainly the possibility of something much worse, such as the eruption of a supervolcano in Yellowstone or a major earthquake on the San Andreas Fault. Events such as these are completely unpreventable and have the potential to cause enough damage to push the federal government into enacting martial law. Conclusion. There are many different scenarios which could lead to martial law. Your job as a prepper is to be aware of them and of aware what to do if such an event occurs. There may be time in the future when the government can no longer uphold its end of the bargain to serve the people. When this happens, you need to be prepared to find or prepared to help yourself and others. What do you think? Does anybody have an issue with that, with the list? No? Okay. Kenneth, you want to give us a call? Our number here at Contrario Network is 516-453-9389. 516-453-9389. Again, if you want to go to the chat room, it is open. Have at it. Well, what do I want to talk about next? We got the martial law thing, because everybody loves talking about that. Well, it's true. Oh, what's this one? Yes, we will talk about that. By James Walton, seven things you need to survive an EMP. Seven things. Those stories have been pouring out for at least 5 years about the weakness of our power grid. We are still woefully unprepared. And one of the most effective ways our enemies could cripple our power grid is with what? An EMP. Of course, you all know that. You're the smartest listeners in podcast and internet radio. It would require a tremendous amount of energy, usually from a high-altitude location, but like a nuclear bomb into the country, it could happen. Now, this is the way it works, folks. Yes, you want to wipe out the entire power grid for the country. You want to send the entire country back to the 1850s. You need to have the high-altitude detonation. But as T.D. Barnes, a guest of the show early on, and it was one of his, well, look for it. You'll see it. Look at the episode. We talk about some of this. TD has used this as an example, that if a terrorist were to say, for example, walk across the border, go to some high power tension lines and detonate a small nuclear weapon, you will get the electromagnetic pulse, although it will be on a regional or a local level, it will knock out that section of the grid. It won't, because it's at ground level, it will not be big enough to wipe off the entire grid. But let's extrapolate, shall we? Let's take it a little bit further. Let's say, shall we, terrorists manage to, say, detonate several of these small nuclear weapons at various points around the United States. So let's say, let's pick, say, Chicago, Seattle. Pick any of the large cities in Southern California. Let's say New York. Say Houston. And Memphis or Jacksonville, or both. Jacksonville, Florida, or Memphis, Tennessee. And they all detonate. Let's say they these clowns manage to do this. Look at this way. It doesn't have to be a coordinated strike. But it does have to be coordinated in the event that they should at least be able to all detonate within 30 minutes of each other. Again, ground level, not high altitude. But by doing so, you could create enough confusion and enough problems by scattering it around the country. You know what? I would add Detroit to that list. I would add Detroit to that list. Not that there's that many people living in Detroit anymore. Everybody that could has fled the city anyways. But I'm just throwing it out there. You got to think of these things. What if? Is it, if I can think of it and you've thought of it, is it really that far of a stretch for the imagination that they haven't thought of it? So why is the collapse of the electric grid such an important issue? It would not merely be a power outage. It would be the collapse of the power grid across multiple states that would take years to fix. And by then, 90% of the people in the affected area might be dead. So how would you fare in a nation without power for 1 year? Power affects many different things we don't normally concern ourselves with. Water sanitation. Communication systems. Waste services, energy production, food transportation, military defense. Losing just one of these could result in chaos. Now, imagine if we lost all of them at one time. So by now, I hope you see exactly how much of an EMP would affect things outside your own walls. The loss of these services would undoubtedly spiral the nation and its citizens into chaos like nothing this world has ever seen. The good news is that there are several items that will give you a fighting chance at survival after an EMP. Number one, once near and dear to all of our conversations, how about a gun, a firearm? Fortunately, guns are not yet electronic. Almost every gun you can buy still works off of very simple mechanics. It's this simple design that makes the gun so appealing, and an EMP would have absolutely no effect upon it. Think of all the electronic items that an EMP would affect. Without them, there will be groups of terrified and desperate individuals who are willing to do almost anything to get what they need for themselves or their families. They're not willing to do almost anything. They're willing to do anything. Now, these unspeakable horrors might only be avoided if you had the firearms to protect yourself. Number two, you know, let me expand upon that. They might be avoided only if you had the firearms and the training and the skill to protect yourself. You're saying, well, I don't need training. Yeah, you do. Case in point, here in Chicago, many of the gangbangers kill innocent people. I know you're all surprised. I know what you're thinking. But my point is this. They do not use proper shooting techniques. They don't know how. They think that if you aim the weapon and pull the trigger, you're going to hit your target. It doesn't matter the fact that they're driving down the road in Chicago, in the city of Chicago, which, by the way, this time of year has lots of potholes. It does not matter that they're jerking their hand like they're going to throw the bullet out of the gun, because they've seen it on TV and it works so well. Some of these guys could have their arch enemy stand in 20 feet in front of them and they'd still miss. So, yes, you need training as well as a firearm. Number two is maps. After an EMP, you probably won't be able to stay put full on unless you have an impenetrable bunker or a remote cabin in the countryside. And if you're on the move, you're going to need plenty of paper maps. I recommend getting a good local map of your county and state. If you're planning on driving a long distance, get a detailed atlas of your country, where you live. Yes, we have international listeners here for this show. Knowing where you are going is the next important step. Hopefully, you have already chosen a bug-out location that makes sense for your area and mode of transportation. Last week, we talked about bug-out versus full-time retreat. One of the examples was you live in Miami, and your bug-out location is somewhere in Miami. Mm-hmm. You may not have the luxury of vehicles or GPS, and this is where those hard paper maps will come in very handy. Always keep them in your car or bug-out bag for such an occasion. Number three, paper knowledge. I know some preppers who have hundreds and even thousands of e-books about survivalism stored on their phones, Kindles, and tablets. That's fine. But after an EMP, all those devices will be useless, and those e-books will be gone forever. So, yes, you can keep them in a Faraday cage, but what if the EMP happens while you're reading? That's why you have to have several printed materials and books at your disposal. Not only that, well, you could put the Faraday cage in and recharge it using one of the solar panels that are so prevalent that it will take you, 8 or 9 hours to recharge the battery, but it could be done. Now, here's a short list of books to have in your library. The Lost Ways, The Survival Medicine Handbook, The Art of Eating Through the Zombie Apocalypse, Bushcraft 101, A Field Guide to the Art of Wilderness Survival, and The Encyclopedia of Country Living, if you can find a copy somewhere anywhere along the way. All right? Just putting it out there. Want you to know these things. All right. Okay. What else do I need to tell you? Number four, a pre-1980 motor vehicle. I would say pre-1975. You may think that old car your neighbor owns is obnoxious, ugly, loud, and not nearly as nice as your new 2017 model. But the problem with your new car is that's basically a computer on wheels that will fry during an EMP. If you want to bug out of the city, you'll need a vehicle that doesn't have an electronic ignition or too many electronic components, which means you'll need something from around 1980 or sooner. I'm thinking 1975 or sooner. Now, it depends on the model, of course. Some early 80s vehicles are okay, while some late 70s aren't. So be sure to check before you buy or restore an old vehicle. That's important stuff. Well, it is. Well, what else did I want to tell you? Nope, that's wrong. That is absolutely grossly incorrect. And I won't do it. No, I won't do it. Okay. The next one we want to talk about. Five, a Faraday cage. Above, I mentioned a Faraday cage. In case you don't know, it's a container designed to insulate your electronics from EMPs. They're actually not that hard to make. With just a little effort, you can put together a small cage that can protect electronic devices such as radios, satellite phones, even though I don't know who the hell you'll call, small solar panels, and so forth. So if you want to protect large solar panels or other large devices, such as power generators, you'll need to build a larger cage. So, for example, and I don't know if this is, where's Brian Kiesler? I need him in here for this one. They say, for example, you could use a metal trash can or a large box wrapped in foil. I don't know about that. But like I said, if I've got Brian in here, I'm sure I can get a quick answer on that. Number six, hard assets. What are we talking about? We're talking about this. Before there was electricity, there was gold and silver. Long after electricity, we must assume it will be the same. The value is ancient and may yield you better results in buying from resources than even paper money. So after an EMP, your ATM machine will no longer work, and people have to use other things for trade. In addition to some precious metals, stock up on several barter items. If a barter economy emerges, you'll have a better chance of being able to trade for what you need. Number seven, wit and adaptation. They don't bottle it and sell these. They don't. But I can assure you that in a world of desperation, you will need more wit and adaptation than you can imagine. This is just a matter of thinking, planning, and being alert. After an EMP, there may not be any more relaxing nights in with the family. Each night may pose a new and different challenge. Each interaction with the humans around you may require your total attention and suspicion. To survive in the post-EMP landscape, you will need to be your best asset. America's power grid is still not prepared for a powerful EMP. An attack like this would kill us from the inside out. Now, as we're finishing this, what happened this last week? It has been confirmed that North Korea just tested 4 ballistic missiles. It's time to get prepared. Think about this. Do you think that knucklehead over there with the bull haircut, do you think he has any resolve in not to fire those things off? What does he care? His people are starving. Sure, we retaliate. We hit back with our nuclear weapons. He doesn't care. You don't got to feed dead people. And you know he's going to be buried way underground with himself, with the DPRC military and the Korean Workers' Party leadership. You can bet, yeah, he's not going to give a damn. And if he does decide to shoot them off, and they just happen to hit the western coast of the United States, do you really think that China is going to do anything to stop them? Do you think the United States would be too, what's the word I'm looking for? Think the United States would be too afraid to retaliate because of China? Because if he fires those nukes, you know damn well, DPRC, they're coming across the DMZ. They're coming across the DMZ. You know, those guys, the way they're looking at it, in for a penny, in for a pound. If we're going to do this, let's do it right. Or let's change the target. Let's say they get it to go across the sea of Japan and hits Japan, which, by the way, because of their new constitution at the end of World War II, can only have defensive military forces. They have to rely on the United States for offensive military forces. Would we risk it? Would we slip the leash off Japan? Because I'll tell you right now, I got a feeling the Japanese, they know how to play with radiation. They just can't stop. They just can't figure out how to stop the Fukushima thing. If you don't think the Japanese after being nuked twice in the last century, I've decided, oh no, I don't want nuclear weapons. Like hell they don't. They know how effective it is from firsthand experience. I'd be willing to bet they'll have their nuclear weapons. I'm just telling you about it, all right? Conclusion is this. Obviously, there aren't the only things you will need to survive an EMP. You would also need a bug-out bag, emergency food, and many other survival items. Preppers should try to prepare for as many types of disasters as possible. So if you're not prepping, get going. What are you waiting for? Hello? Doesn't appear to be anything in the chat room. I'm surprised. Anyways, it is what it is. Let's see what we got here with it. We'll restart the chat room. Nope. Looks like nobody's in there. That's okay. It's like I told Terry when Terry says, look, I need a break from the radio, you know, doing the show. I don't think, you know, I have a thing to offer. You know, same thing I told Terry. I said, look, I've done this show before by myself. I can do it again. You know, it's always fun to have more people calling in, that kind of thing, than it is for nothing to happen. You know what I'm saying? But I've done it by myself. That's okay. Oh, okay. Rob A. No, let me make sure something here. I'm going to give it one more quick once over to make sure I'm not giving anything away or anything else when I read this. Okay. Rob, I'm not going to tell people where you live or even the general region you live in because it's not really necessary for that. All right. Rob sent this to me March 15th, and I apologize for getting back to it late. I was cleaning out the mailbox. I said, I got to get this back to this guy. So Rob A., who lives east of the Mississippi River. I said I wouldn't say the region. I didn't say what part of the country. He lives east of the Mississippi River. He says, hey, John, I've been listening to you for a while now. I typically listen to your show the day after. I consider myself a medium-level prepper. What keeps me up at night is that I work about 65 miles from home. I drive it every day. I keep my GHB, for those new preppers, that's get-home bag, in my truck at all times. But on a typical day, my family of four kids can be scattered about. Generally, they'd be within 10 miles. My wife works from home and is on board with the prepping and the SHTF scenarios. But if we have an EMP and I'm 3 days minimum away, my first concern is just getting myself home. Second is her being able to venture out and gather up the kids. These are all legitimate concerns for you preppers out there. Third is we are a blended family and being able to get my kids from my ex or convincing my ex-wife to go with my wife, that would be his second wife, to come to our house for safety. Now, his scenario, his situation is not all that different from many, 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 many others. Welcome, guest 2044 to the chat room. Glad you're here. So his scenario, his situation is not all that different. Think about it. How many preppers and their spouses have children? Lots. Remember, 3% of the United States population are preppers. I guarantee you, you're going to find families, or blended families, as Rob would say, that are preppers, that work. And this is a good question. Now, he says, what do you think about a topic for a show? He says, I'm going to do my best to call in. I'm not so much concerned about the contents of the get-home bag, but more on how it will be walking home. He says, I think my best bet is to walk the highway. Well, I got to tell you, Rob, you bring up the, like I said, the scenario that many prepper families have and what they face. Also, I'm not so sure walking the highway is the best. I kind of like the idea of railroad. That's what I'm guessing. You know, but that's me. And judging, you know, and a lot of people live near a railroad. You could walk that. Would it be safer to walk alongside the railroad than to, say, walk along the highway? All right, let's say this. You got your get-home bag, okay? And Rob, he doesn't say what he does for a living, but let's just assume nothing. He's got his get-home bag. He might be in management. He might be the blue-collar guy. It makes no difference. He's walking down the road with a bag. If it's the get-home bag, and he sounds like he's been prepping for a while, so he's going to have some essential equipment and stuff he's going to need. Like I said, he says he's 3 days away minimum walking. Now, if he lives 65 miles from home, that means he's got to walk at least 22 miles a day. It's very difficult for people to walk 5 miles. But regardless, let's just, you know, we're taking what Rob's, you know, question was. He emailed it to me. Actually, he sent it to me as a message in the inbox through the CRN Facebook page. But regardless, so he's got to walk at least 22 miles a day with a bag. And I'm not talking a paper bag or your Aldi bag or plastic bag, whatever. My guess is if it's a proper get-home bag, he's a serious prepper, has been. He's a medium-level prepper, he says so himself. You know, it's going to be something along the lines that looks like a backpack. What it looks like, I don't know. He doesn't say. But my point is this. You're walking along the highway, and he's in day two trying to get home. Somebody somewhere is going to see that bag. And they're going to think, I wonder what's in that bag. Do you think he's going to have to fight to keep what's in the bag? Or would there be less chance, or would his chances be greater of getting home if he walks, say, the railroad tracks? Along the railroad tracks. Follow the railroad tracks to get close to home and then get off the tracks and make your way across the countryside. You know what I'm saying? You see where I'm going with this? I guess my point is try to avoid people if you can. If this is a, he's supposing it's an EMP. There's going to be a lot of abandoned vehicles on the road. Some people will be like him. Maybe they're 3 or 4 days away from their home by foot. Maybe they travel 50 miles a day one way to work. Maybe they do more. I'll tell you this, here in the Chicago area, Metro Chicago, it's not unusual to have people live in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Kenosha County, Wisconsin, and they have to go to Chicago. That's 40 miles there. Now, and I can tell you this, Rob works in a metropolitan area. How big a metropolitan area? Let's put it this way. It's big enough to have its own baseball team, Major League Baseball team, okay? That gives you an idea. I'm thinking, God, I'd be sure that there's all kinds of a railroad hub coming in and out of that area. So, and this is another issue. You know, sometimes, you know, what if you're a prepper, you're divorced, you have kids, but your ex-wife has custody of them. Not a big deal. But it goes down. You want to get your kids because you know your ex-wife wasn't a prepper. you know you've got all the stuff you need to survive. Now, in Rob's case, he has an ex-wife and a second wife. Don't know any of the circumstances about that. Don't know, don't care. What we do know is just from his writing, he says, being able to get my kids from my ex or convincing, good luck, my ex-wife to go with my new wife to come to our house for safety. Now, they could very well be friends, and maybe the ex-spouse is less than enthused about how things went down. Who knows? Don't know. But that's an issue you're going to have to deal with as a prepper. And, you have to ask yourself another question. What am I going to put in my get-home bag, my GHB? No, not the drug, your get-home bag. What are you going to put in it? What can you carry in it? And how much are you willing to carry? Now, Rob says he's 3 days. Minimum. That's if it's not snowing, it's not raining, it's not too cold, it's not, all the environmental factors. It could be 5 days for him to get home. Let's assume that he's got to walk it 3 days. He's got to do at least 22 miles a day. So you have to worry, you got to think about the environmental factors as well. Let's face it, if you're raining, you're going to be walking a lot longer than what it would normally take if it was just a normal 73-degree day. It's snowing. It's going to take you. I don't know how bad it could be. That's another thing, too. I would rather walk on the railroad tracks than on the highway. Because you know damn well if an EMP goes off and the interstate system around your area is snowed in and now it's not getting plowed at all. Not this kid. No. I will not do that. We have a caller. Let me take it. Hello, caller. Welcome. Sorry it took me so long to get to you. How are you?
Hey, John. It's Rob.
Rob! How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, my friend. I was just discussing some of the things. It's like, my friend, you brought up an excellent email there, message. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to talk about this. And so I was just talking about it. And before you say anything, all I've said is you live east of the Mississippi River and you live in an area that's large enough to have its own Major League Baseball team. That's it. So go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I had on your show, so I was kind of, so I got to hear what you were saying. My whole thing with walking the highways is hoping that I could catch it early enough to where hopefully the chaos hasn't gotten too out of control.
Okay.
But the problem is by not walking the highways, now I'm either walking through people's yards, subdivisions, across people's farms. And with me being on my farm, if I see somebody in a normal times walking across my place, I'm going to go and confront that person.
Right.
And so now we have, say, an EMP, and you see somebody walking across your property, and they may have cattle or whatever. Now they're on hyper alert.
You're right about that. You're right. And there's no argument, man. It's a gamble. It's a dice throw.
Right.
And let me ask you this. Are you white collar or blue collar worker?
I'm in construction, so I'm a blue collar.
That's fine.
And I'm always dressed for the elements. I keep extra stuff in my truck on a regular basis, jackets, clothing, rain gear, and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay. That answered my question. Because it's like, I don't know what is, what's in your get-home bag. But my guess is you probably have enough stuff in there that it's not going to be too heavy. And yes, you said sometimes you're minimum 3 days away. And that's, I assume you're talking on a good, day, you're 3 days away. It's good.
Yeah, I tend to be on a job, you know, I may be on a job for 3 months or up to a year. This particular job that I'm on is on the farther, it's out there from where I normally am. But
okay.
I'm typically within an hour's drive of everywhere I go of highway time. So I'm generally 40 to 60 miles away.
All right.
Kind of my range based on where I
okay.
live.
Okay. Do you consider yourself to be in prepper shape?
Been to shed some pounds, but I'm on my feet working manual labor all day. And then,
okay.
so I work in construction all day, and then I come
uh-huh.
home and I work on the farm all night. So it's nothing for me to be in my work boots 18 hours a day.
And that brings up another factor. People, footwear is so important on your get-home bag. Make sure you have, and don't, for God's sake, don't wear tennis shoes. Get a good pair of 9-inch boots.
Which
you're gonna need
I have on me on a regular basis.
So do I. You know, ever since I retired, I got a pair of running shoes? Yeah, and I put those on when I take the dog for a walk. But if I'm just doing whatever I got to do around the house or going out, I've got my 9-inch duty boots on.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm used to wearing it after 26 years. That's what you stick with because that's what works for you.
Right.
And that's another thing, too. Folks, make sure you get the 9-inch boots. Don't get the half boot. Get the 9-inch boots because you don't want to roll your ankle. By having a 9-inch boot on there that wraps the ankle around there, you can prevent a lot of heartache and problems if you roll your ankle because the boot may stop you from rolling your ankle. And you roll your ankle, oh, God, you're in bad shape. It's going to take you longer to get home. Rob, I'm so glad you called, man. Now, let me ask you this. You brought up a really good point, and I think it's pretty common. You know, you're divorced. You know, I don't know what your relationship is with your ex, but would your ex be, do you think she'd be willing to go with your new wife to your house for safety, do you think, or is she still bitter?
She's not bitter. There's one other thing that I didn't mention in there is she lives with her mother who is elderly. Now her elderly mother, you know, is perfectly capable of being on her own, and she can work and cook and clean, and she still drives and all that kind of stuff. But would she be up for it's probably about 20 miles between my house and my ex's house. Halfway. So, but I don't think that if she didn't have her mom in the picture, I think she would be willing to come. She's up on the events of the world, and she thinks that the world's going to crap. So, but she doesn't have that prepper mentality.
Okay.
But I don't think her mother would physically be able to make the walk. That's where the problem would come in.
You know, and you bring up a good point. How many preppers have elderly in their extended family? That's and we've talked about the elderly are going to need special needs because they're elderly. It's not like, you know, you and I prepping where, you know, we're still young enough and we can still get around and do what we need to do. The elderly are going to need special considerations. And you're right, 20 miles, that's a long way. And you're right, they're not walking. You're absolutely 110% correct. And then you brought up another point, which I thought was really, really good. Now, how many kids do you have? Did you say you had three kids?
I've got four.
Four kids. Three wasn't enough. Okay. So you got four kids. So you got four kids. And I imagine they range from age from what? Like what? What grade to what grade?
I've got a 9-year-old girl, a 10-year-old boy, a 13-year-old boy, and a 15-year-old girl. Two boys and two girls.
And do they do extracurricular activities after school and all that stuff?
Some do, yes.
Oh, all right. You know where I'm going with this, listeners. Go ahead,
now,
Rob.
Generally, the extra stuff is at the school. And so their school is about 10 miles from my house, but all and they're scattered across three different schools, but they're all kind of within like one compound.
No, I know that I've seen those schools. We got them here in the Northern Tyranny state of Illinois. I know exactly what you're talking about. The district is all literally on a huge plot of land, and you got no. I hear you. I got it.
Right.
You know what? That's not bad. But like you said, the problem is they're 10 miles away, and if they're doing extracurricular activities, let's say they're doing athletics, and one day, one has an away game. The 15-year-old has an away game somewhere. The 10-year-old and the 9-year-old, they're doing other stuff, and it's like trying to round them up. That's a big concern, and it's a concern that prepper parents have to address. How do we do this? Now, the 15-year-old is, you know, the 15-year-old's old enough to know what's going on and could probably meet you somewhere.
Right.
The other ones, I'm not sure, you know, they're still, in my opinion, too young to be trying to do something, anything on their own out there. And that's a good point. How do you get the kids at 1:30 in the afternoon if, you know, the grid goes down for whatever reason? How do you get them there?
So
you bring up excellent points.
My original thought is if my wife could ride her bicycle to the school, that would put her there probably within an hour, I'm guessing, on a bicycle, because it's fairly flat. I think she could probably make that ride in an hour, hour and a half. But then she would probably have to ditch the bike once she got to the kids, or walk it. And then, but at least she could get there within an hour, hour and a half's time. But then she's got a good, say in the perfect world after the EMP that all four kids are in that area and she could gather them, then she would have to start her trek home.
And she'd have to have her own get home bag that she's taking with her.
She does.
There you go.
She takes one in her vehicle as well.
All right. Is it something that she could strap on her back and get on the bike and take off with?
Yes, it's a backpack.
Okay, there you go. So, you know, these issues are stuff that proper parents have to deal with, you know, if they need to deal with it ahead of time. You can't do it, you know, on the fly. It doesn't work. If you do it on the fly, I guarantee you something's going to crap up that you didn't think of, and it's going to screw everything. And I'm thinking to myself, if, you know, that one thing I did, I told my daughter, because I started prepping when she was eighth grade. So, and we had a plan. I had a plan. And one of the things that I had to deal with was, you know, I was divorced from her mom at that point. And, you know, she says, well, Dad, what about Mom? And, you know, my first inclination was going to be, what about her? But and I bit my tongue, believe me. I thought I was never going to talk again. That's how bad I was. So I wanted to say something. But I said, you know what? I said, look, if your mom wants to come over, she can come over. You know, I mean, what am I going to do? Tell my child's mother, no, I'm sorry. You get to you know, survive, and she doesn't. It wouldn't have been a pretty sight.
Yeah, that doesn't work too well.
It does. You know, you look, and divorced, hey, we got prepper parents who are divorced, and you brought up some excellent, excellent points. And it's something that needs to be addressed, something I don't think we've talked about before, and I'm glad you brought it up. Now, you were saying that have you talked to your ex-wife about the stuff like this, or does she get it? She just doesn't subscribe to your theory, or what?
Basically, yeah. No, I've never gone into detail. I've sat there at some of the sporting events for my one son, and you know, we started to talk about the election was going on at that time. That was the hot topic, and agreed with the way me and my wife think on the election, so we're on par there. And I wanted to say, you know, if things go south, you know where we are. We are set up out there to live after a major event happens. We heat with the wood. We've got the livestock. We've got the animals. We've got a cistern out here. We've got the hand pumps for water. We got hand grain. We got hand mills for grains. Seeds, we've got it. And if you need to, you need to find your way out here. But I've never actually had the conversation.
Interesting. Wow. You know, I give you credit for thinking about it. And I think the next step for you really is just got to sit down and just ask her. What's the worst thing that she could tell you? And that is no. Okay. You've done all that you can do at that point. You haven't lost anything, but you put the you know, invitation, if you will, out there. Whether she takes it or not, well, that's up to her. But you brought up a good point. What if the kids are, you know, she has, you know, what if she has the kids that particular day or whatever? Would she be willing to say, yeah, go ahead and come get the kids? And would she be willing to do that? Or would she say, no, I want the kids with me?
She would want to keep the kids with her unless there was a major thing that she – I don't think that she would let me take the kids with without her coming. So in all honesty, it may even be better if she did have the kids and I could get there.
I think I was just
going to say,
you know, if you're going to do that, then, you know, you could also bring her mother too.
Right.
Which would not be bad because grandma's going to have some knowledge from stuff that we've forgotten about over the years in terms of.
And I do think, and she was kind of, her mom was raised the old school way on the old farmsteads and homesteads and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there is a chance that she could have the value there.
And that might work out better for everybody. That's kind of where I'm going with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do have the talk with her. Just mention, you know, say, you know, I want your mom to come too because she knows things and she, you know, and, you know, obviously you want your kids to be safe. She wants the kids to be safe. She doesn't sound like a person, you know, just in the brief conversation we've had, she doesn't sound like somebody that would use the kids as a power pawn to try to, you know, to use the kids to manipulate you in terms of a survival situation, you know, but I don't know, just basically what I've read and what you've told me. And it probably wouldn't take that much convincing. Actually, if there was a serious situation, you know, she'll probably say, okay, let's face it. You throw a lifeline to a drowning person.
Right.
You're not going to say, forget it. I don't want the lifeline. I don't like you. I'd rather drown. No, most people will grab that lifeline and say, drag me up. I will be here. So, interesting. And you don't sound like a medium-level prepper to me. You sound like somebody that knows what they're doing. It sounds like you've thought things through, and it sounds like you've got a pretty good setup. I would say you're probably a high-level prepper.
Well, I never said that because, you know, I don't have the military background for like the fighting and all of that kind of stuff. And but I've kind of based my life more along the homestead. So, I live in a farming area. I have a neighbor of mine who has lived his whole entire life on this 200 acre farm, not married, never had kids. And he does everything very old school. And I've got to know this guy very, very well. And I look at the farmers, you know, the old time farmers were our first preppers. So,
well, they're all self-sufficient.
Right.
They have been. If they didn't grow up, you know, the ones that grow up that way, who's like, you know, the third, fourth, and multi-generational farmer, they've grown up being self-sufficient. They know how to, they don't, you know, just something breaks, they don't go out and buy a new one. They fix what they've got and continue on again.
Right.
Those are the guys you want.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've kind of geared ourselves and we still have a lot to do. We're still on the grid, but we've got solar on the short-term list.
All right. Very good.
So we're getting there.
Good. It sounds like you've got, you know, I'm thinking to myself, it sounds like you're really You're doing it right. And don't worry about, look, just because, look, and this goes for all your listeners out there. You don't have to be in the military or have military skills to be a good prepper. Yes, you can be taught those things. And there are people out there that if the grid goes down, they may wander by your farm. Like they might go by Rob's farm. And Rob says, you know, if I see somebody, damn right, I'm going to go see what they're up to. If it turns out the guys, you know, maybe have some military skills, might be somebody you might want to befriend or learn from the guy. You never know what's going to happen with it. And again, it's going to be a crapshoot. You're going to have to, you know, do the best you can with it. Not everything's going to be right on the money there. Or on the up and up. It's very difficult. If it was easy, we'd all be preppers, and I wouldn't have to do the show. All right. Now, you say, so you work a full-time job, and then when you get home, you decide, you know what, I want to farm and do more. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, do you have a prepper group in your area? Have you joined a prepper group? Do you know of a prepper group in that area?
I have not. I have some of my friends that live in the area. I don't really throw my stuff out on Front Street as far as what we have, but I've obviously uh-huh. been to my house. We have these conversations. I don't think any of them really know to what extent of,
okay.
you know, that we have. But then, you know, my friends are like-minded.
All right.
They have the animals as well. We're all gun enthusiasts and that kind of stuff. So some of my
That's
friends
important.
Made the comment that, you know, if we have an issue, I'm coming to your house. And I always tell them, well, if you show up, you better have everything you can pack.
Yes. No, so. That's perfect. That's a reasonable request. Look, because you don't have a group doesn't mean, like you said, you have four or five friends who are like-minded, who are more or less, you know, if they're farming, they probably have canned foods and everything else. I mean, canning food is almost a lost art, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, just because you don't have a formal prepper group now, when the grid goes down, like they said, you know, I'm coming to your house. Okay, fine. This is the deal. Come to my house. Bring everything you got.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that plan. They just got to get there and bring their stuff. And they better not bring, and you know I've said it before if you listen to my show, don't be the guy that brings a 20-pound bag of rice and a 50-pound bag of beans and say, here, I'm ready. Like hell you are. Ain't happening. You know. But other than that, I think you've got a good plan. I think you've got a good grasp on what it is you're trying to do and what you want to do. Socially, I don't think you're any different than a lot of other prepper parents out there who are divorced. Let's face it. You know, if you got kids, you love them, you want to be safe. You know, the bottom line is, you know, the ex-wife and I never got along, but when it came to our daughter, you know, we both had to bend here and there. We didn't like it, but we did it, you know, and now she's an adult and she does, you know, whatever. That's a whole different story. My point being, you've got it worked out, you've got some ideas, and you're not, you know, put everything on the table. What have you got to lose? The worst thing your ex-wife could say is no, I don't want to. But it
right.
sounds like she knows, but it sounds like in the back of her mind, she also knows that's going to be the best bet. And everybody wants to be on the winning side. Unless, of course, you're a sociopath and you don't mind self-destruction. So, well, it's true. You know, everybody wants to be on the winning side, and this sounds
sure.
like this sounds like reasonably be a winning play for her. Not only does she get out of that, you know, wherever she is, but she has to go somewhere that has abundance and the ability to function after the grid goes down, and she gets to take her parent with her. That's a win-win situation right there. Kids are safe. Her mother's safe, she's safe. That's a win-win-win, and you get what you want, which is your kids safe. Win-win-win-win
right.
all around. It's what they, I guess it's what you call the total sum-zero game. And that is, no one comes out on top, everybody's still even after it's over and done with. And that is probably the best scenario you're going to come up with, the best situation you're going to have. best outcome you could probably hope for, I think. And I think that's more than reasonable. More than reasonable. So, but that's me. I mean, what the hell do I know? So, well, it's true. So,
yeah, I don't know if I could ask for much more than that. So,
I think, you know what? You're one of the few listeners I've actually called in with this particular situation. Like I said, it doesn't mean you're the only one, but you're the one that came out in it and said, you know what? This is what I'm facing. This is what I'm looking at. And I got to tell you, man, I give you props. I give you props for it because it brings up a whole new realistic scenario that people have to face. So you get a gold star for the week. For the week. Not just a day. You get it for a whole week because it's very good. And I'm kind of surprised so we don't have more people calling in about this. But again, like I said, Sunday night, you know, sometimes people, you know, got to get ready for work. What time do you go to work, Gary? Rob, what time do you go to work?
I leave my house at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, I used to do that. Oh, God.
Yep.
Oh, I hated
but,
it. Hated it.
You mentioned on your show probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, you know, what do we want to hear? What does everybody want to hear on the show? We're looking for topics and that kind of stuff. And I got me thinking, and this has been on my mind for a while. And then actually I sent you a order for a shirt. So I was kind of bummed out on them a little bit.
Oh, so am I, man. Thanks for reminding me. I have to go commit Harry Carey. I'll be back now. What the hell, man? I've just gotten over that disappointment, and you just have to reopen the wound. Thank you. Do you have any salt water you could throw in there, too, just to, you know, make sure
it
just
tastes
really good? I'll do my part. You know, that still irritates the living hell out of me, but it is what it is. Hey, I get it. You know, maybe just not. You know what? Sometimes the answer is no, and it means no for right now, not no forever.
Right.
There'll be other times, and we'll figure something else out. You know, I've been thinking about other things now for about 2 weeks now, and every time I think I got an answer for it, it doesn't work out. So I just think of something else, and I'll just keep doing it. But I'm glad. You know, I wish more listeners would do what you did because I thought it was great, and I encourage you, new preppers. Go to the CRN Facebook page, message me, tell me what it is you want to talk about, you want to know. If I don't know it, and believe me, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. There are things I don't know that I don't know that I know, okay? So I will find the answer. If I got to call people, get them on the show, I will get the answer for it. So, because I was kind of like in Rob's shoes, I've been there, I know what he's thinking. And if it's not something I even thought about talking about, but I'm glad you did. Excellent. Let's say gold star for the week for you, sir. So if you leave at work at 4:30 in the morning, what time are you headed home?
I leave work at 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. So okay. So it takes about an hour and a half to get home by highway?
Yep.
Are there any railroad lines that run close to, you know, your driveway or your driving route or
There are some major railroad hubs that run through this area.
Right.
But they also run along, if I got off the highway and was trying to go back roads or subdivisions or everything else, I would have to cross a major river probably 3 times with the way it bends and turns and goes and everything else. Or you're going across a bridge, which the only bridges across this major river are highways.
No railway bridges?
There are, but I'm trying to think. That was and when you brought that up, that's one thing that I did not consider at all. So that's a good point. But I'm trying to think of where the major areas are, and they take you right through the metropolitan area.
And you got. And, you know, and that's the problem with the railroads. You cannot get around that.
Right.
On the other hand.
So I would have to walk about two-thirds of my trip would be highway. And then the last leg of my trip also, my parents are still alive and they're in this area, they would be at about the 40-mile mark heading home. So I could get to their house. It would take me – if I walked the exact same way that I drove, to get to their house would take me about 2 miles off the beaten path, off my route, which – If I could make it to their house and things are still, they live in a kind of a subdivision. I don't know what kind of shape it would be in, but it may give me a chance to have a layover for a day or two.
That's good thinking, and it's okay. But you know, remember that during that layover, right? But on the other hand, your mental attitude is going to be, I don't want a day or two layover. I got to get.
Right. Sure.
Unless, of course, you've got your friends that are coming there that can keep an eye on things till you get there. That could be a possibility for you, too.
Yeah, because that's my whole other – that is another thing I thought of. When my wife's gone rounding up kids,
right,
my place is left hanging open.
And there are no good answers for that.
Right.
Unless – you know, I mean, there just isn't. Unless, of course, this – unless I've given out the warning signs, what to look for if bad juju is coming down the highway at you. If you picked up on the warning signs early enough, you could conceivably mobilize your friends, get them deployed to your place before the event. Then,
right.
Then you'd have somebody to go with your wife to get the kids, or maybe one or two people to watch the place. To you know, it's all a game of timing sometimes.
Well,
if it gets to the point
to where I can see it and I start getting my friends to come this way, I'm not going to work.
Well, that's excellent point too. You know, and I said for me, the biggest warning sign there is when the national politicians, the national leadership disappears from the media. They can't be found, and no one knows where they are.
Right.
That, my friends, is a big warning sign because they've gone down into the bunker, into the rat holes, and they ain't coming out. So that is the big one for me. And if you keep up on that kind of stuff, I mean, I'm a news junkie. I'm trying to break myself of the habit, but I find it really hard, man.
I'm right there with you. Yeah, and I get hollered at all the time for having the news on.
But there's a reason. See, that's a sign of maturity. It's not, too many. You get these young, especially on the construction crews, you get these young punks. They want to listen to music all day and all that other stuff. The mature guys are the guys that want information, guys who want to know what's going on. And I don't mean that they want to know there's a Bon Jovi concert in Indianapolis or in Chicago or whatever, anywhere. They don't care about that. You want hard news, hard information. So you're out there on the job site, and somebody, some announcer or whatever, to listen to talk news like I do, talk radio, and somebody says, and they can't find the president's cabinet, no one knows where they're at. That's a warning sign, folks. That's the time for you to pack up and say, guys, I'll see you tomorrow, maybe, and go. Get out of Dodge and roll with it quickly. Something else I thought about, tactically speaking, not all railroads have this, but most of them do. Most of the railroad tracks themselves are built upon a mound of earth. They're elevated, and they're run that way. And because they are, the ground on either side is lower. You could actually use that ground to shield yourself from sight as you're making your way to or from wherever your destination is, if you're walking or driving. You could actually make that. Now, for example, in central Illinois, the old Route 66, major rail line, freight line, runs right down, right next to Route 66, which is Route 50, which is I-55 now. So what happens is, if you have to get off the highway and you have to get off on foot and make the run, I would go to the far side of the railroad track, so that way the elevated earth is between me and the highway. And that way you can go. And it's all farm country out there. But, that's it. Old Route 66 is a paved road. The only problem you have with old Route 66 is that it goes through a bunch of small towns. Can you get around those? Absolutely. Would it take some time? Maybe. Maybe. But tactically speaking, if you want to move without being seen by a lot of people, that might be the way to do it. Let's face it, you're out in the middle of nowhere, and you know what I'm talking about, Rob. There's lots of distance between point A and point B where there's nothing in between there except farm field. And those, you know, if there is an EMP, it knocks down the vehicles, and the vehicles aren't moving. People are just standing around, picking their nose, going, my cell phone doesn't work. I'm not getting a signal. And they'll sit there for hours, standing on top of the roof of their cars, holding their phone up, saying, I can't get a signal. Well, no shit, Sherlock. You're not going to get one ever again on that phone.
And that's what I'm hoping for, is to be my cover with everybody standing around with their thumb in their butt.
That's the golden hour, baby. That's the what they call the golden hour. While everyone else is trying to figure out what the hell happened, preppers and some patriots, because they both run the same circles more often than not, have already got an idea in the back of their mind what's happened, and they're reacting to it. And that as soon as that happens, the clock is ticking. You got that golden hour where you got to make your move and go. Do what it is you got to do before the rest of the people figure it out. Like I said, there's only 3 million preppers in the United States. There's 315 million people population-wise. So 1% of the population is basically going to be your is going to be, you know, on the move knowing what's going on. So something to think about, my friend.
That it is.
Now, do you carry a firearm in your go-home bag?
Yes.
Good. Now, are you carrying a rifle, shotgun, pistol, both, all three, what?
I carry a handgun.
That's okay. That's fine. I'm curious.
I've just
What caliber do you prefer?
I carry a 9.
That's it. Okay. It's fair enough.
I know there's a lot of them that you know, one something larger and everything else, but it's just a. I had one. I had a few of them before I got into this. I stuck with it. My wife has one as well. I don't like having 15 guns on 15 different calibers, and then
don't
that's all
that.
That meant much more ammunition I got to stock.
Right. No, it's just personal preference. My wife does the 9mm. I like the 40 caliber. That's what I carried for. You know, for years, years and years, that's what I like. That's what I use. So
well, my father is also ex-law enforcement, and he carries a 40.
Yeah.
So, but I would love to carry my AR, but
yeah.
I also, you brought up the last time, you see a guy with a backpack, now he becomes a target. He's going to become even more of a target if he's got an AR hanging off of it.
Right. Like I said, there are no good answers, you know, and having the AR is not a bad idea. Don't forget too, there's a lot of snowflakes out there. When they see a big black gun in their mind, they want nothing to do with you. Nothing. What you have to worry about are the young punks who don't know any better, because they're the ones that are going to try some crap.
Right.
But like I said, there's no good answers. I get it. I understand it. You want the AR-15. You want the rifle. But on the other hand, do you want to stick out like a sore thumb that says, I've got supplies, I've got weapons, na-na-na-na-na, you don't. You know what? Somebody somewhere is going to do it.
Right. And then I tried to keep my backpack. It's all black. But I tried to find one that doesn't look so much military. So it kind of, if somebody saw it up close, they wouldn't realize it's not a school backpack. But from a distance, I think it would pass as just an ordinary backpack. I don't have all kinds of stuff hanging off of it. I don't have all kinds of extra little bags and compartments and all that. It's pretty much within on the inside.
It looks like something you would see on a college campus.
Yeah, and that's what I went for. I didn't
want
to go to camp.
That's exactly what you're looking for. Because at this point in time, look, it's like I've said before, you want to be the gray man. Hey,
right.
I just got a backpack, man. You don't want to be running around in camo when it first goes down. That's an advertisement to people. Don't do it. Be just like they are. So. You brought up some good points, my friend. Thank you. And you made this night very pleasant to speak with you.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad you called. What else would you like to talk about?
I'm not sure. I mean,
it's all right. It's all right, buddy. Yeah. I just want to give you the opportunity. That's all.
Yeah,
Will you call back? Would you call me back sometime? Because I do enjoy speaking with you. Because
yeah,
I said,
absolutely.
I think let me know what you decide and how you progress in this. Because now I'm interested. I'm curious, and the listeners are going to be interested and curious too. Especially the ones that came in late to the show, like, say, Justin or Porky Wheel from Northern Ireland, because they didn't catch the beginning of the show. So now they're gonna be interested later on when they listen to the whole thing tomorrow. So, but I'm interested in how you work this out, because I think you got a really good foundation on it. I really do. So I want to know how this works out. As I said, your situation has a bunch of different aspects that I think are common to a lot of other preppers out there. So, yeah. Maybe I have to give you a segment on the show. We'll call it Prepping with Rob. Or Rob's Domestic Prepper Tips.
I don't think I'm quite to that point yet.
I know. I'm just throwing it out there. Planting the seed, baby. See what happens with it. That's all. You're a good guy, man. I'll tell you, I enjoy talking with you because you got, you know, as we converse, we get to different ideas and stuff. And this is how prepping works.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you've been doing with your friends for years. And a lot of preppers don't realize they've got prepper friends until somebody starts talking about it. And then you go, hey, wait a minute. So let's go to your place. Your place is more secure than mine. That's a perfect excuse. It's okay to use that. Say, your place is safer than mine. I'll bring my stuff. And that's another thing, too. Your prepper friends, there's nothing that says they can't pre-position their supplies at your place ahead of time. Less for them to carry and not have to worry about or forget about in the panic to get the hell out of Dodge. And it's going to be a panic to get the hell out of Dodge, let me tell you.
Yep.
So I just wanted to, some ideas for you to throw out there. And I'm sure you've thought about these ideas. I'm just saying it for the benefit of the smartest listeners in internet radio. So I do. I got smart listeners. You're case in point, man. I got smart listeners.
Yes,
I do. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of them don't even, the ones that email me, the ones that kind of freak me out are the ones who say, I've been listening. I'm contacting you through the dark net because I don't want to be contacted, but here's the information you want. That's the stuff that drives me nuts because I know the NSA is going, who is this guy? Why are they sending him something? It's like, okay, great. Well, that reminds me, I forgot. I want to say welcome to the NSA. Welcome to the broadcast this evening. Glad you guys are here. I always invite them. There's nothing wrong with being nice to them. Be nice to them. You never know. You know,
right.
you might get stuff you don't realize. Hell, some of the people that contact me on Bitcoin, oh wow, they had everything down. They know all about it. And they said, you know, here, this is my IP address. It's in the dark net. I don't want to be contacted. Please don't say anything about it. And I honor their wishes. If you send me something you don't want me to say who you are, I won't do it. I won't say it. And then once I'm done with it, I delete the email. As far as I'm concerned, it's gone. It's not there. I can't get to it again. So the only record of it is on the broadcast for that one time. So,
you know, I kind of got the same mentality as you saying hi to the NSA. I figure, you know what, I'm not that advanced in my how to do all this stuff and hide my stuff, so they're probably already listening. So just embrace it and go on. That's all you can do.
Exactly. Exactly. And for you, sir, tonight, you get this. Yes, sir. You get applause. for joining the show tonight. Very good. And we like, you know what? Doesn't matter. NSA is okay. As long as they see what people don't realize, and this is what I'm going to venture a little bit here. When the government says, oh, we don't have records of that, the hell you don't. The NSA's got records on everybody, on everything. Don't tell me you don't have access to it. You do. They do. Right. They've got it. But too many of them are afraid to actually, you know, come out and actually say it or do it.
It just goes back to the old phrase that common sense is not so common. And the NSA is a firm believer that the population today, it's not so common.
I agree. You know, if there was no danger, we wouldn't need the NSA. They wouldn't be stockpiling emails and phone call logs or anything else. If there was no danger, we don't need them. There's a reason. You know, I look at the NSA as a two-edged sword. Yeah, it could be used against us, but it could be used against the government too. And I think those in government are a little hesitant to pull that sword out and use it on each other. I think it's just a matter of time before somebody pulls that sword and, you know, politicians use it against one another at the national level. It's just a matter of time before somebody pulls that sword and uses it. And they'll use it, and the NSA doesn't care because they got dirt on everybody.
Well, I mean, we all know that the whole government, regardless of party, is the so-called good old boys club. And all
yes.
it takes is one string to start to unravel, and I think it'll go quick.
I agree with you. And that's something I want to caution the listeners about. You know, forget the mainstream media. They're going to lie to you. They're going to tell you what to think, not what's going on. It's up to you to do your due diligence and try to decipher what the hell's happening. Now, there's a lot of ways you can do it. Me, myself, I use alternative news sites. Do I believe everything I see there? No, you got to use your common sense. But there's a lot of clues in there. You just got to look for them. Sometimes you got to read between the lines, or as I like to say, you got to look beyond the mirror. Look beyond the mirror. Sometimes people call it smoke and mirrors.
I try to look for at least two or three sites with the same story before I kind of put any faith into it.
Right, and then I read the articles. I don't read the headlines.
Right.
Let's see, you know, if it's the same story word for word, then all that's telling me is that they stole the story from each other. If there's some slight differences in it, that tells me they're getting their information from different sources. And that's a big thing to look for, listeners. If you see a story that's practically word for word, they've stolen that story from each other. Read this. If you got some of the same headlines and the stories are somewhat different, that means they're getting their story from different sources. So you could put a bit more faith into it. That's just my opinion. That's what I use. I used it when I had to talk to people on the street who were suspected of crimes against each other. You know, that's one thing I did. Separate the people and ask what happened. You will get the story, the truth, in a very short amount of time. And you'll tell who's lying, because those that lie have a tendency to repeat the same story word for word. And that's not reality. Reality is people see things differently. They can look at the same event and interpret the whole events differently than other people. And that's where you start getting the truth out. And you use that same technique when you're looking for news stories. You watch and wait. Listen, we've already filled the prerequisites for another civil war in this country. Two of the three. We just need that third one fall into place. I mean, you've already seen it. I don't know. I posted it on CRN. Conservatives went after the snowflakes yesterday and gave them a dose of their own medicine. I mean, they wailed on them. Just like they were doing to everybody else, they got a dose of their own medicine. I hope they like it. My point is, at what point does it get out of hand? That's the trick. If you can figure that out, you're good. You're very good. So, And you, Rob, are in a primo place, man. I like the idea that you're on a farm. That just makes more sense to me than anyone else. The only thing I think you have to really worry about is the Golden Horde.
Yeah,
coming
but
out, coming out of that River City.
Yeah, because, there's a couple little medium-sized towns.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that by the time they kind of filter through, that I'm a little bit off the beaten path enough to where they don't really know. I mean, I'm not as isolated as I would like to be by no means, but I'm hoping I'm far enough off the beaten path to where I shouldn't have the masses of people going down my street.
Let me ask you this. Do you have a fence line around your property and stuff?
Yes.
Okay, good. No, that's good. Most people are lazy. They're not going to go through a fence line. They won't take the time for it. They'll take the easy path.
Mm-hmm.
The path of least resistance, if you will. So, yeah.
My house, we sit about 1,500 feet off the road, but we are visible from the road. And we've got
nice.
We heat with wood, and then we also have a wood oak stove. So that, unfortunately, will be visible.
Huh. You know, the problem, and this is, this is for the listeners that are in the cities, the urban areas. Do not believe that just because you go into the countryside, into the rural farmlands of America, that they're going to be waiting for you with arms open and plenty of food, water, and shelter to provide for you. They do not, and they will not. Trust me on this. They won't do it. Am I right, Rob?
Yes, you're right.
They don't have umpteen supplies. They're not going to allow you to go, squat on their land where they're trying to grow food to feed their families. They're not going to allow it. And I wouldn't either. And neither would you if you were in their position. So let's, now if they were to come to you and ask you, that'd be different. If they could provide a service, maybe that might be different, or provide a skill that you don't have. That might be different. But just to go into the rural farmlands expecting that you're going to be taken care of, or that you're quote-unquote, this is the worst part about it too. Just because you live in the city does not mean you're smarter than the farmer. Matter of fact, you're probably dumber than a box of rocks. Like I said, farmers have learned for years. Something breaks, we fix it. We don't throw it away, and we don't go buy a new one if we don't have to. We'll fix things first. And we reuse things over and over and over again. If it's broken, we continue to use it. You urban people, get it out of your heads now. You're not as smart as you think you are. Most people are educated beyond their intelligence, which makes them doubly stupid and doubly dangerous. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. You may stand on the soapbox if you want and say what you wish.
One thing I do see all the time. I'm kind of veered off topic here. Bartering. People talk about ammunition as a barter tool.
Mm-hmm.
I myself would never, ever, ever barter any of my ammunition away for something else. Because
what about those antibiotics? Say if one of your children was sick and somebody says, I got some whatever antibiotics. Would you do it then?
My theory, before I answer that, my theory is if somebody's willing to give up antibiotics for ammunition, that means that they don't have any ammunition whatsoever, because antibiotics,
true,
I think, are going to be worth their weight in gold.
Now that person,
they've only got what ammunition I'm trading them for, but they know, obviously, that I have more. Now I've just armed somebody who was not a threat and made them a threat.
True. No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying it's a situation out there, and I'm glad to see you thinking it through. You get another gold star for tonight. See, these are critical thinking. that preppers need to have, and we don't. A lot of preppers don't have it. You got to think through it a little bit. Don't look at the situation. Look beyond the current situation to what it could be or what it might be, and then make a decision. You got to be thinking two or three steps ahead. Always. Always, always, always. If you do not, you like, then you run the risk of, like Rob says, somebody who doesn't have ammunition but say they have antibiotics, well, now you just armed them. And now, well, not only do I have antibiotics, but I want some of your food too. In which case, your answer should be, from behind a barricade, should be a loud and resounding kiss my ass. It ain't happening. That's just me.
Yeah. And then I guess also, too, it would have to depend at what stage of the game we're in. Has a year gone by? Has 2 years
right.
gone by? Am I up at, has a small little centralized market, you know, opened up in my area? So does this guy not know where I live? I mean, yes, they could follow me, but, I mean, I guess there's just a lot of variables that would have to play out before I could honestly answer that question.
I wasn't looking for an answer. It was kind of rhetorical.
Sure.
It was just something to throw out there just to
right.
get other preppers thinking. I like the way you think. I think you're correct in your way of thinking. And I do believe that, like you said, maybe 9 months to a year down the road, there might be the, you know, the quote unquote farmer's market going on in a town generally, or a small town, where they might be bartering, or, you know, or maybe they're taking gold or silver or whatever. You know, I agree. I got a question for you. Have you built a still on your farm?
A still? No.
Are you planning on it?
Actually, one of the guys that I talked to, and a guy that I talked to that does pretty much know all of my stuff, and he's like-minded, he has one. And
okay.
It's a small one that would be portable.
Nice. Because I'm thinking, if you got a barter, people will barter for alcoholic adult beverages.
Mm-hmm.
They will.
Yep.
They will do that. I just throw it out there. I know Terry, I believe Terry was either building one or he had one made specifically or built specifically for that purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm sure.
Yeah, I have heard him talk about it.
And I'm sure he tests his still out at least once a month just to be sure it's working. I'm just saying. I'm guessing. I don't know. I'm just guessing. So, anyhow. Well, my friend, I want to thank you for calling in. I'm getting ready to call it an evening here. I am so glad you called in. This has been very interesting. And I want to know how it works out. I really
okay.
do.
I'll stay in touch.
So, I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
Thank you.
That was Rob A. I read you his message to me, and he's been my guest tonight. I'm glad he's been here. Thank you so much, my friend. All right. Well, Porky Wheel decided, no, he was having technical problems. He just got logged in. Justin was in for a while, but then he left. He says, I'll see you on Wednesday. All right, Justin, we'll see you Wednesday, buddy. In the meantime, I think we're going to call it an evening anyways. I think we've had a good show tonight. Let me think. Did we get everything? Let me check. I want to make sure we check. I want to check to make sure we got everything. Failure. I got that. Now that's good. What's this? Okay. You know what? I think we're good. I do believe we are good on this. Yes. Excellent. Most excellent. Okay, yeah, we're good. Yes. Very good. All right. Good deal. All right. That's it for this evening. I want to say thanks for joining us tonight, or joining me tonight. We will be back on Wednesday. Hopefully, Miss Dawn has her ducks in a row so we can get this her show rolling. And I believe she said she wanted to do it on a Friday night. So I have to get hold of her. Hopefully she'll have everything together. I can put it all together for her, and we could get her rolling. Julie is due to back soon. Those of you who like Julie's show, it's due back soon. And that's good. So don't fret about Julie. She'll be back, and I will unleash Dawn upon you all, hopefully Friday night. We'll see, though. We'll keep you in touch. I'll be back on Wednesday, 8 o'clock Central Time, for a roundtable report. On what I will report, I do not know. But I will find something. I've got some time now. With that said, I want to say thank you for joining me here at the Contrario Network. I'm John Jeffers saying goodnight. And to my prepper and patriot friends, I say to you this, be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. I'm John Jeffers. Good night.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.